well do you know the law? You could find out by joining our panel of celebrities in the Law Game. Together with them, you'll hear dramatizations of three separate incidents that led the people concerned into court. See if you can guess who won each case and why. And here's the man who'll be judging how close you came to the right answer, your chairman, Shaw Taylor.
Good evening. Well, the cases we have for you tonight are, as always, fictitious ones, but they are based on actual cases that were fought on the same points of law. Our resident referee company will no doubt astound you with their versatile virtuosity as they act out each case until I call them to a halt with the bell. And at that point, I will be challenging the panel to tell me who won the case and for what legal reasons. They each have 50 points to bet on their decisions. Whatever their bet, I'll give them evens if they pick the winning side and odds of 2-1 if they give me the right reasons in law. To speed things up a bit, we might cut one or two corners on strict legal procedure, of course, but all the relevant facts will be there. Our panel, three men, once again, locked together in the jury room since last week, and still entering a plea of not guilty, are John Peel, Paddy O'Byrne, and Rob Buckman. Paddy O'Byrne, have you ever said to yourself whether there ought to be a law against this, or I would like to see the law changed anyway?
As somebody who earns his living mainly reading news bulletins, I would like to have a law passed against news editors who give you successive words ending in STS and beginning in STS. Like, last night, a band of fascists stole a herd of Messerschmitts 109s.
I'm sure that will be noted in the newsroom. Rob Buckman, what about you? Any law that you would like to see changed?
I'd like to ban all drivers of yellow Ford Cortinas with registration letters between J and M. And I would particularly like to ban all people who drive very close behind motorcyclists, because I'm a rabid motorcyclist, and it absolutely gives you the willies with a car crawling up your backside, because they don't understand that you can slow down without using your brakes. And so you spend the whole time looking nervously in your wing mirror and doing all kinds of foolish things like falling off, simply just because you're frightened. And I think there should be a following distance. In fact, I think that all cars should have men with red flags walking in front of them.
Why Cortinas between J and M?
I have no idea, but there's something about owning a yellow Ford Cortina between J and M that makes people feel very dangerous. I've noticed that.
John Peel, any situations that have angered you enough to want to see a law instituted banning them?
I'd change the licensing laws. As a man who works unsocial hours and therefore can't really drink in the evenings, and there are times when, I'm not a great drunkard, I should emphasise that, but there are times when I'd quite like to have a drink in the afternoon. And I have a lot of continental friends from the greater Europe. In fact, rather more continental friends than British friends. That must mean something. But whenever they come over here and I have to explain the licensing laws to them, they're always absolutely astounded and find it rather laughable.
Yes, licensing laws is one that's cropped up before.
I'm sure it has, yes, and will again, I don't.
Now we've met the panel, it's time to meet the referee company as they take us straight into our first case. It started when a bookmaker working at one of the country's leading dog tracks was summoned to the office of its managing director.
Do sit down, Mr. Lucas. You've been here at the track for almost a year now.
It's a year next Tuesday. And I want to say right away that I've been very happy with the cooperation I've had from the management.
Well, I'm glad you've been happy here, but as you yourself must have already realised, attendances have begun to fall off a bit in recent months.
Well, we have to expect that with the recession and money being tight. But things must get better soon, I'm sure.
Yeah, I certainly hope so. That's why I've asked you to come and see me.
Ah, you can count on me. I'll help you out in any way I can.
Yes, I knew you would. The point is, Mr. Lucas, our board of directors had a meeting last night and decided that a possible way of helping to lessen our economic problems would be to cut down on the opposition, as it were. We think there are too many bookmakers on the track, and it has been decided that since you were the last to join us, you will have to be the first to go.
You mean you're kicking me out?
Oh, I wouldn't put it quite like that, Mr. Lucas. It's just that we have a yearly agreement with you, and we will not be renewing
it. But you can't do that. I mean, for one thing, it'll be a slur on my reputation.
Oh, no. We shall have it reported in the sporting press that we have asked you to go with great regret, and have always found you to be a man of honesty and, of course, the highest integrity.
Fine words, Mr. Carnell, but they don't feed my wife and kids.
Well, if this dog track goes broke like those football teams, then none of us will feed our wives and kids. Releasing you may sound like a draconian measure, but it has to be done for the benefit of your colleagues who have been here a good deal longer than yourself.
Why don't you be honest and say what you mean? You want me out of the way because you and your colleagues hope that the money the punters have been betting with me will go on the tote.
Yes, well, that is what the board had in mind. The revenue we got from the tote did help us going. And unless we can rebuild those takings, I can assure you our future is in jeopardy. If, of course, things do start to improve steadily, then, of course, we'd be quite happy to consider an application.
Take me back, huh? You won't need to, because I've no intention of going.
I'm afraid you have no choice.
Haven't I? Ever heard of the law on monopolies? I'm just a start. You'll get rid of me and then the others one by one, so you can have your precious tote run as a monopoly. At least that's what you and your bloody board of directors would like.
Look, I assure you, we have no intention
to... No, and you better not have. Me and the other bookies working here are protected by the Betting, Gaming and Lotteries Act. You'll find it clearly says that while you're operating a tote on the course, you can't exclude a bookmaker from continuing to work here as long as he behaves himself.
Well, I'm not prepared to waste any further time arguing the point with you. The board has decided you must go, and there's an end to it.
Well, I'll tell you this. I'm not going until you put it in writing. And if you're foolish enough to do that, then I'll take you to court and make you eat every word.
Now, Mr. Carnell did accept that challenge, and he put it in writing. And Lucas carried out his threat to fight his dismissal in court. Did he win the case, or did he not? Paddy O'Byrne.
I don't know whether the banishment of a bookie, who, after all, is not there as of right, he's there as a licensee, a concessionaire, is entitled to invoke the monopoly's trade if the entire bookmaker's profession were being banished so that the tote could hold the monopoly. Then I think that would be a valid point. As it is, I think that... our bookie friend has got to find himself another pitch.
That he would lose.
I would say so, yes.
All right, fine. Now, Rob Buckman.
It doesn't sound like a monopoly if there are lots of bookies hanging around the Dubry, and but being booted out by the bosses who have a sort of opposing thing sounds like intelligent business practice. In general terms, I would support the management, just in order to show that I'm a right-thinking, caring and sensitive parent. I am going to plump for Mr. Lucas winning his case under the Betting, Gaming, Lotteries and Young Person Offenders Act, which makes him innocent of trying to sell hamburgers on Lord's Day.
That is very...
Talk about hedging your bets.
Very impressive, Mr. Buckman. I turn to John Peel.
I think Paddy's right in that this isn't something which would come under the heading of monopolies legislation. So I'd say that he probably lost, yes.
You think he lost?
Yes.
All I'll do now is find out how many points you will bet. You've got 50 points each to start with. Paddy, you've got 50 points. How many would you like to bet that you are right, that Lucas lost?
25.
Right. Rob, you have 50 points. How many will you bet that Lucas lost?
I'm absolutely certain of my case. I'm going to bet 13. Oh, come on now. Be brave.
Going mad, isn't he? John Peel, you're the odd man out here.
Yes, I learned a valuable lesson last week when I lost all of my points in a do-or-die operation. Yes. I think I'll just go 20 again.
You'll go 20?
Mm.
Fair enough. That, Rob, you're the one odd man out, aren't
yeah.
you? You quite like Mr. Lucas.
Yeah, sounds bad, doesn't it? Yeah.
Not necessarily. It could put your points up to 63. On the other hand, it fooled him down to 37 because he lost. Mr. Lucas lost his case. The court held that the owners of a dog track had the right to limit the number of bookmakers operating if they honestly believed that the economic viability of the course was threatened. They relied on the tote for that viability. In cutting down its competition, the number of bookmakers, they had acted fairly and in the interest of all concerned. So I didn't get the right legal reasons. But I will give the points up. Paddy, you get 25, takes you up to 75. John Peel, you stand at 70. Rob, you've still got 37 points to bet with as we go on to the next case, right? Second case, we go into court where a police constable is being sued for damages by a young lady that he arrested as she tried to run from a stolen car. Now, as we join the case, the counsel for the injured girl is questioning her.
Miss Marchant, that's a very nasty scar you have on your right cheek. How many stitches did it need?
I had 38 stitches altogether, 20 on my arm and 18 on my face.
So, you are permanently marked because Constable Adams used such unnecessarily brutal force in attempting to arrest you. When he leapt at you from behind, did you make any attempt to struggle?
None at all. I was no more than about 5 yards from the car when, without any warning, he grabbed me from behind with a flying rugby tackle. It brought me down and I landed in this rose bush in someone's front garden.
And it was the thorns of the rose bush that did what must have been most painful damage.
Yes. All I remember was screaming for about 3 seconds. Then I passed right out and woke up in the casualty department of Highlands Hospital.
Well, let's see if we can find any possible justification for the constable's extreme action. Could he, perhaps, have reason to believe that you had committed a murder? Or mugged some defenseless old-age pensioner of their paltry few shillings savings?
No, all I'd done is to sit in the back seat of some boy's car that turned out to be stolen.
Did you know it was stolen when you got in it?
No, of course not. I was walking along with my girlfriend, Elaine, when these two fellows asked us if we fancied a ride to the seaside. Well, it was a nice day, and they weren't bad-looking, so we said all right. Elaine got in the front with the driver, and I got in the back with the other one. Then off we went down the East Lancs Road towards Southport.
And when did you first realise that the car might have been taken without the owner's consent?
Well, I sort of guessed it when the one that was driving couldn't find the right switch to work the stereo. It was obvious he hadn't worked it before.
Well, did you make your suspicions known at the time? I mean, did you challenge the driver on whether it was his car?
No. Well, by that time, we were tearing along at over 70 miles an hour. Well, I knew the two fellas were trying to impress us with their daring, and I was afraid to say anything that might put Elaine and me in more danger.
And for how long were you travelling at that breakneck speed?
Oh, for about 20 minutes, I think. We were going round the roundabouts on two wheels most of the time. Elaine and I were dead scared. But the more we screamed, the faster they went. It was all a big joke to them.
And what finally brought the speed down?
Well, it didn't come down, it went up. We passed this police motorcyclist that turned out to be Constable Adams. We were well over the speed limit, so he started to chase us. And that's when the fellow in the front driving told us he'd nicked the car for a joyride, and that he'd show us how easy it was to shake off the copper.
Oh, did you make it clear that you wanted to get out?
Well, they wouldn't have listened. Anyway, I couldn't have got out. It was a two-door car, and the only way I could have got out is if they'd stopped. And with a motorcycle on our heels, they certainly weren't going to stop for me.
Now, how did the chase come to an end?
Well, by mistake, we went down this street that was blocked by roadworks. We screeched to a halt, and the two boys ran off.
But you didn't run with them?
Well, not right away, no. I knew I hadn't done anything wrong. Delane said we'd better go and all, or we'd probably get done for being accessories or accomplices or whatever they call it.
So you got out of the car, and that's when the constable pulled you down from behind, causing you to sustain those terrible injuries.
That's right.
Thank you, Miss Marchant. I have no further questions.
I have some questions for the plaintiff, my lord. Miss Marchant, firstly, let me say that despite the scar on your cheek, you do look particularly attractive and feminine today. Tell me, were you dressed like that on the day the incident occurred?
No. This is a new dress.
Yes, I thought it might be. Would I be right in saying that on the day in question, you were not wearing a dress at all, but had on a pair of jeans and a light blue T-shirt?
Yes, I think I did.
And that being 8 months ago, your hair was much shorter than it is today.
Well, I grew it longer in an attempt to hide the scar.
And also, I suggest, to hide the fact from the court that when the constable aimed his flying tackle at you from behind, he could conceivably have mistaken you for a young man, which is what he did. And in order to stop what he thought was a young male car stealer from escaping, he used whatever force he considered necessary.
He's got eyes, hasn't he? If he'd taken the trouble, he could have seen I was a girl. He not only used unnecessary force, he wasn't entitled to use any force on me at all. I haven't done anything wrong. I didn't steal the car, and I never knew it was stolen when I got in.
Then why did you attempt to run away?
I've already said. Because Elaine thought we might get blamed for being involved.
Well, that was the evidence that was heard in court panel. Could that constable be liable for damages, do you think, Rob Buckman?
I think you're allowed, as a policeman, to use what you think is reasonable. And it seems to me that the policeman, if she really was wearing the blue T-shirt and jeans, was might have been okay. And this was the kind of thing that goes down as misadventure or something like that. So I guess that my guess is that the policeman would have been all right in restraining her, providing she was wearing. I think there's actually a law allowing you to restrain anyone wearing jeans and a blue T-shirt.
Okay.
Which is why I always wear a white T-shirt. You know.
So you find for the policeman in this particular instance.
Yes.
Let me turn to John Peel. Who do you find for, John?
I would imagine, actually, basically, that the policeman got away with it, because they do tend to anyway, and the defence that he thought the young woman was a young man, although very questionable, is the kind of thing which I think guardians of law and order are likely to go along with. So I can't think of any strong legal point either way, to be perfectly honest with you.
Except that they tend to.
Yes.
They tend to.
Yes, that's not going to win me any points, I know.
Paddy O'Byrne, what do you think?
It seems to me that the only thing of which the constable might reasonably be held to be guilty of, in view of Miss Marchant's reasons for joining this motor car with a friend, Elaine, was restraint of trade. However, it seems to me totally irrelevant whether the recipient of the flying tackle from behind was male or female, or a front row forward, or a wing three-quarter. The gender or the position on the field of play seems to me totally irrelevant, and I don't think, honestly, that the amount of force employed was excessive in view of what looked to him like a dead certain nick.
Right.
And I say good luck to him.
So you say good luck to him, you think the policeman gets away with it. All three of you say this. Now, Rob, let me come back to you. 37 points you've got. How many of those will you bet that you are right, that the policeman could not be sued for damages?
18.
18?
Oh, it's only a game, isn't
well.
Oh,
John
Peel, Monte Carlo here,
you've
I
got come. 70 points. How many will you bet?
I think 30 this time. Go 30. For the 100. Yeah.
All right. That will make you around 100 if you're right, or it'll take you down to 40 if you're wrong. Paddy O'Byrne, you have 75 points. How many will you bet?
Well, I seem to hit a winning streak last week with 25. I'll stay with that.
You will?
Yeah.
All right, fine. Then I can tell you, gentlemen, that all three of you are right. Miss Marchmont lost her case. The court held that the police officer in the circumstances had every right to suspect that the person he saw escaping from the car was involved in stealing it, and his actions, though in hindsight perhaps were more physical than was absolutely necessary, were legally justified as the force which he used was reasonable in the circumstances to arrest a person he believed to have committed a crime. Now, reasonable in actual fact came from you, Rob, as a word, and Paddy, you also said that he was justified in using the reasonable amount of force that he did, so I will double your marks for you. John, you said it. He got away with it because they tend to get away with it. So I can't double your marks for you. But it does make an interesting scoreline of Paddy O'Byrne in the lead with 125, John Peel with 100, and Rob Buckman not that far behind with 73. Final case coming up. Two men who were partners in a giftware shop come souvenir shop. Now, this starts after Philip, the older partner, had just returned from seeing their accountant.
Well, Phil, what did the old goat have to say?
We've got a problem. The tax people want to check every bill, every receipt we've had for the past 7 years.
7 years? But why ask?
Well, no particular reason, except that we're just one of the small businesses that's managed to earn a living.
But we've been straight as a die. Our accountant knows that.
Yes, Frank, he knows it, we know it. But it's going to be a huge time waster convincing the tax people.
But you have kept the receipts and papers, haven't you?
Luckily, yes. I'm nothing if not thorough. Trouble is, they're all still in those packing cases in the basement. I never bothered to unload them when we moved here. Well, I suppose I'd better make a start on it now while we're not too busy.
Right, Phil. But before you sink down to the depths of the basement and depression, tell me, what's in this registered parcel I just signed for? It was addressed to you.
Oh, it's arrived, has it? Oh, good. It's a job lot I bought for us. See if you like it.
Oh.
I saw one and I ordered 50 pair when I was at the trade fair in Birmingham last month. Now, there you are. What do you think of those?
Gold cufflinks. Oh, they must have set us back a bit.
No. £100 a pair.
You're kidding.
They're only gold-plated. Just the old hexagon-shaped throttly bits dipped in gold and clip-soldered on.
Great. They look like real solid gold.
Well, if they were to be a lot heavier, worth at least 20 quid a pair. And they'd have a hallmark, which these don't.
Yeah, these will look nice in the window. Good tourist bait, eh?
Yeah, well, that's what I thought. But we'd better make sure people know they're only gold-plated. I think we ought to be able to charge a couple of quid a pair.
Yeah, easy.
Yeah, well, I'll put today's bargain, gold-plated cufflinks, £2 a pair.
Right, Phil.
Yeah, well, call me up if Ferris phones, will you? I want to have a word with him.
All right.
Oh. Hi there.
Good morning, madam. Can I help you?
I sure hope so. I'm going back to New York this evening, and I haven't bought all my presents yet for the folks back home. I want something that'll be a sort of souvenir of this trip to London.
You couldn't have come to a better place. You name it, we got it. Oh. Porcelain models of St. Paul's and a Tower of London, Big Ben alarm clocks, coffee mugs with hand-painted pictures of beefeaters, table mats with photos of Piccadilly, Trafalgar Square. All genuine bad taste, eh?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, how about this set of enameled pre-decimal currency?
Yes, that's good. How much are they?
£60.
Each?
No, the set. They come in a boxed-up set.
Oh, they're real nice, but too expensive.
£60 was about all I wanted to spend, and I was hoping to get all five presents for that.
Well, how about those Nelson's column ashtrays behind you? They're a good conversation piece, and they have a practical use, too.
No, I got ashtrays last time I was here. I was looking for something different and not so bulky to carry. What's that you've got in your hand? They look cute.
These? Oh, they're a new line I just got in. Cufflinks made out of gold frontney bits.
Oh, they're swell. They're real gold, are they?
Genuine pure 18 carat.
So I suppose they'd be too expensive as well, huh?
Well, not if you buy them in bulk. I mean, normally they'd be £20 a pair. But I can let you have five pairs for £60. But do me a favour. Don't tell my partner. He's more of a businessman than I am.
Don't worry. I'm not going to be around long enough to tell anybody.
Good. I'll wrap them up for you.
Will you take traveller's checks? They're in pounds.
Sure, sure. We'll take anything but Confederate money.
Now, panel, when that American lady got home, she very soon found out that she'd been sold gold-plated goods as being real gold. So she reported it, and both Phil and Frank were charged under the Trade Descriptions Act, and they were found guilty and fined. But Phil appealed against the heavy fine and said that he wasn't a party to the deal, and he would have definitely have stopped it if he'd been there when it happened. And the question I want you to answer is, did he win his appeal or not? John Peel.
Yes, I would say that Phil probably did win his case, but again, I'm not too sure what the legal reasons for him doing so would be. I mean, presumably the fact that he wasn't there and had no, took no part in the proceedings and didn't realise that his partner was deceiving the young woman. But I mean, how that would be represented legally, I honestly don't know.
Frank did admit, of course, that he had not, he'd done this without Phil's knowledge.
Yes.
And indeed, the woman said in her statement that he'd said, please don't tell my partner. All right, fine. So you find that he would win his appeal. Let me come down to Paddy Byrne.
It seems to me that the partner who was innocent and who was a patently honest man, judging by the earlier dialogue, cannot evade responsibility by saying that he wasn't a party to one particular transaction.
Right.
Because the partnership, presumably, is all-embracing. And another lovely old legal maxim. You'll love this one.
The court will invariably give effect to the intention of the parties.
Oh. Very impressive.
Felix Aylmer, 1947. and for that reason, if for no other reason, I think that both partners are guilty and that Phil cannot evade his responsibility by his subsequent appeal.
Rod Buckman. It seems to me that basically you could be part of a thriving enterprise like being a Cray twin and say something, you know, when he held up this something, I didn't intend him to do this at all, Your Honor. Honestly, I didn't. I mean, it's a matter of whether you could prove that you said he wasn't to do it.
Well, Frank was very honest, and he did say that Phil knew nothing about it and I had said to him, you know, we're going to sell these as gold-plated. So Frank wasn't that much of a villain as far as Phil was concerned.
Oh, I see. He did. Sorry, I missed that point. So Frank was bang to rights, was he?
He was bang to rights, except he
filled his brief
and bang
to rights.
Is Phil responsible as well?
Oh, definitely not, because any man in the basement should not be responsible for anything at all under any circumstances, especially with his bad back, you know. So I'm going to let Phil off.
Okay, fine. John Peel, you have 100 points, and you say that Phil got away with it and his appeal was allowed.
Yes, I'll go. I don't think I'll make the mistake I made last week. I'll invest 50, I think.
You'll put 50 on, will you?
Yes.
All right, fair enough. Paddy O'Byrne, you're odd man out this time. You say a partnership is a partnership is a partnership. So he carries the can as well, irrespective of whether he meant to or not. You've got 125 points. How many of those will you bet?
As the man said, it's only a game, 100.
100 points. Well... Oh, it's either the moon or the cellar for you, isn't it? Right. Rob Buckman, you've got 73 points.
I think my tablets are beginning to wear off here, sure. I'm feeling very nervous about the whole thing. I'm going to bet 26 points on Phil getting off so that I get 99 if he does.
Oh,
unless you think I said the right
quite.
Thing, which is inconceivable.
Right then. Paddy O'Byrne says that Phil lost his appeal. John Peel and Rob Buckman say that he won his appeal. Paddy O'Byrne is right. Phil lost his appeal. And his conviction stood. And it might be, Paddy, that you almost wrote this answer, because it says, Partners carry on business jointly. They jointly supply the things which it is the business of the partnership to sell. And Phil was a joint partner and therefore equally guilty of supplying the cufflinks to which a false trade description had been applied. Even though it was accepted, he would have been against the transaction had he known about it. So the scores at the end of that are: Rob Buckman, you have 21 points, so you weren't entirely disgraced. John Peel, you have 50 points, but with a magnificent 325. Our winner is Paddy O'Byrne. Well, that not only ends tonight's show, but very sadly, it's the end of the present series as well. Oh, well, I'm sure it won't be too long before we're back with another series of The Law Game, but until then, let me just say goodbye on behalf of tonight's panel of Paddy O'Byrne, John Peel and Rob Buckman, our Law Game repertory company of Vincent Brimble, James Kerry and Wendy Murray, deviser and writer Brad Ashton, legal advisor Doug Cracknell, producer Jan Raven, and finally from me, Shaw Taylor. Goodbye for now. Bye.